Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, I'm Callum Stoneman and welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our weekly programme that looks at all the latest in the technology world from a blind and partially sighted perspective. If you want to get in contact with the show, we always love to hear from you. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be hearing all about Be My Eyes Workplace that aims to make inaccessible information and documents more accessible to blind employees. We'll be hearing about the Proximity PAL navigation device. The usual crew joining me this week, Hubert Pavalkovic, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran. Jackie, I'll start with you this week. What's going on?
First of all, if you haven't heard about it already, HumanWare will be releasing the Evolve machine, which is the upgrade to the Braille Note Touch. But this is a complete revamp. It's going to be coming out around about April, and it is a fully fledged Windows operating system. So it'll be Windows 11, no cut downs, no shortcuts to this. It is a proper full version of Windows Pro. It is going to have 32 Braille cells and a Braille input keyboard. There are going to be a couple of Thunderbolt USB ports and an USB-A port. It's going to have 32 gig of RAM, and it's also going to have a 512 GB SSD and all the usual stuff, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, and it's going to have their Keysoft on it, but you can leave the Keysoft environment and go straight into Windows and use NVDA or JAWS or Narrator, whatever you want to put on it, you can do that as well. It will have Office applications. So instead of, I believe, HumanWare using their Keysoft word processor, they're going to be having the Keysoft shortcuts to Microsoft Word, Microsoft Outlook, PowerPoint and Excel. So it does sound like a really good device. We'll just have to see when it launches, but that is sort of scheduled for about April, and it's called the Braille Note Evolve. And the other piece of news I have very quickly is the Google Pixel 10a launched this week for pre-order. It comes out on the 5th of March, I believe, and so you can pre-order it. The actual A series on the Google Pixel phones are really good value. Apparently it starts off at $499 and it has a Tensor 4, I think, processor, 8 gig of RAM, and you can have 128 or 256 hard storage, depending on, you know, if you want to pay a little bit more, it'll be 256. But the starting price is $499, and they're actually really good. Good value. I've had a Google Pixel 4a, I think it was, in the past, and while I'm not up for buying the 10a because I've already got a Pixel phone, I think it's really good value for people who perhaps want to dip their toes into the world of Android, or those people who just have had an Android phone for a while and want to upgrade. So that's what I've got this week.
They are good, the Google Pixel A series, kind of like the iPhone SE range, or the 16e as it is now.
Yeah.
Which supposedly more basic models. I don't really agree with that. I mean, I've got the 16e and it's absolutely fine. There's nothing on this that I couldn't do on my 13 Pro. It's probably except LiDAR, but again, just never.
How often do you use LiDAR though?
Exactly. Yeah. Like
exactly. Yeah, that's my feeling about it as well. And on the Google, of course, they don't have LiDAR, but I did look at the specs for this 10a phone, and it does seem, you know, like the cameras are really good, 48 megapixel, and it can apparently upgrade for 7 years. So I would think anybody in 7 years' time that has got the same phone I would say that it's kind of really old and probably not fit for purpose, but it is a good price when you consider that the top of the range Google and iPhones are kind of round about the £1,000, 1,100 mark.
Yeah,
So,
easily, yeah.
they are good value, I think, and they do just as well. They've got some interesting colours, I noticed. If you're into your colours, you've got lavender, you have berry, and you have obsidian as well. And I think there's one called fog. So I don't know why. Yeah,
What?
I don't know why they don't just give their phones normal color names. It would be very helpful to blind people.
But a lot of companies do this as well. It's like you said they're guessing, well, what is this color then? I started asking
Yeah,
Gemini or like ChatGPT
I
and
do
going,
as
what is this supposed to be? Give me it in plain English. What color is this?
well. Well, for anybody who does want a translation, I guess lavender is a light purple, berry is probably pinky red. Obsidian will be black, and fog sounds like it's grey.
There you go. See, this is what I like. Simple.
I say, I'm interested to your previous point, Jackie, about the BrailleNote Evolve. That I hadn't heard, and I've seen a few communications come out from HumanWare recently, but I've obviously missed that one. And I'd be interested to see what the reaction is to this one because the BrailleNote Touch, certainly in the first. Maybe the first couple iterations of it were very popular amongst teachers, but less popular amongst pupils. And I totally
Yes.
understood why, because from my perspective, they had honed in on the fact they could make things sort of quote unquote look pretty, but it had been designed from a sighted person's perspective. So the blind or visually impaired students actually using the device found it just as clunky and difficult to use as anything else. And a lot of the attraction of the BrailleNote Apex, for instance, had been
Yeah.
lost. And actually, I got a BrailleNote Touch through Disabled Students Alliance when I was at university. I got it as a backup because actually the Apex was much easier and more practical for me to use on a day-to-day basis. So
Yeah.
yeah, I'll be interested to see if they've learned from feedback and previous mistakes. Because on the face of it, it sounds really good.
Yeah, it does. It's a very high spec machine for, for something like this. It is going to be Braille input. So it's going to have the thumb keys on. You're going to be able to attach all kinds of accessories to this. So if you preferred a QWERTY keyboard, you can attach a QWERTY keyboard. You've got your headphones, your microphone, all other kinds of stuff that you can attach, cameras. There's an HDMI port on it apparently, so that you can attach a monitor in schools. I think HumanWare always target the education market, and I think this is where this one is going to go as well to some extent. I'm looking forward to seeing it just because, well, it's Braille and I just love that stuff anyway. So, there is going to be a QWERTY version apparently, later on in the year. I think the form factor is going to be QWERTY with a 40 cell Braille display. But obviously, as we all know with these things, it's going to be at least probably a grand more. I believe the Evolve, when it comes out in April time, I think it's going to be round about 5 grand. The usual kind of benchmark, really. But there is going to be a 20 cell version of it as well. I don't know when that's coming out, but if there is a 20 cell version and that does make the market, it probably will be a bit cheaper, but obviously you're going to have less Braille cells. It sounds really interesting, and they are going to be at the Sight Village Scotland exhibition. So I'd love to be able to get over to that because I'm going to be in Scotland that week. So if I can get over to the exhibition, I will because I'm absolutely really curious to get my hands on the Evolve just to see what it's like and how it compares. Apparently, it's coming with a case as well, and when you close the lid of the case, it puts the Evolve into standby. So that's another feature. If it, I think it's going to be a lot lighter as well than the BrailleNote Touch, because for me that was a quite a chunky device. I don't know what you thought, Natalie, but I thought it was very heavy.
Yeah, I'd agree with that to be fair. And actually, I think that was the thing is from I had the Braille Note M Power, then I went to the Braille Note Apex. And that was one thing about the Braille Note Apex is it was sleeker and thinner. And to be fair, I did get a bigger display, which I thoroughly enjoyed. I could never go back to a sort of 1820 cell display. That'd be too much for me. But yeah, it was chunky. And actually, you know, it's funny because the Braille Note Touch came with sort of, as they put it, a case attached, which it was sort of like a fabric lid almost that you flipped over and would attach magnetically. I actually felt too paranoid with that because the underside of it still felt exposed to me. So I actually bought a small laptop sleeve to slide it into as well, just because, yeah, I just found it too risky. It was probably entirely psychological. I'm sure it was fine. But the Braille Note Apex and the Empire, it's like Empower, not the Empire. It's was a device like inside a neatly fitted case, so you could technically slide it out, but a lot of people who did travel with it just kept it in its case the whole time, and it worked very well. But yeah, even with the case being attached, the Apex was sleeker than the Touch.
Natalie, what have you got this week?
Recently, I've been having arguments with various smart home apps. So we've discussed some of them before on the show, and I thought I'd share some of the tips that I've worked out myself for some of the frustrations that other users might be having. So the first one's a very small one, but useful, I thought, was I sometimes find, although I've connected Hive to my A-Lady, sometimes the commands don't work exactly as I want them to, or I need to be very specific in my wording. And I couldn't work out sort of what the magic phrase was all the time. And what I discovered was is a very simple thing, but I wanted to boost the heating and I was trying to work out the correct combination, and I had got it working. But what I discovered just by chance was if you on the Hive app, if you add a shortcut or a quick command, which is very easy to do, there's a little button in the top right corner that said add, and you pick what it is you want to do. So for example, the two that I have are boost heating and turn the heating off. If you add them to your Hive app, when you go to the Amazon Alexa app, if you look under scenes, that's where you'll find those shortcuts. So you don't need to worry about the fancy programming. You have it already set up there for you, which for me just I've, it was a really small thing, but I was so happy to find it. So I'm like, oh great, now I know it's actually doing what I want it to do.
Pretty cool. I didn't know it tied into Alexa like that and had it as scenes.
Yeah. And then the other thing that I noticed, and again, I don't know how many people use this, but I use the SmartThings app. Sorry, not SmartThings, Smart Life app. They're the two different ones. So the Smart Life app is not that accessible, but I use it because a lot of smart devices, so like smart plugs, smart sockets. I recently got an automatic cat feeder that links into that. And I got it basically to be able to connect these devices up and then link them to my A-Lady and control them from there, because that's much more accessible than it is using the app. But I did have a bit of an argument with it because it's gotten even harder recently because they've added an AI feature. But the AI feature doesn't seem to be doing anything yet other than annoying me. But if you're like me and you're trying to change the settings on this app and things like scrolling don't work, you can sort of flick your way through the list of devices you've got, but you can't actually activate them, all of those things. I did find a workaround. So if you go to the bottom right corner, and the option on the tab bar is called Me. Select that. You then select Settings, which is up at the top left. You then select More Information, which is somewhere in the middle. And then you select Home Network Topology, which is again somewhere in the middle. And that will give you a list of devices you can activate with VoiceOver and, you know, control it from there if you need to add devices, remove devices, check the Wi-Fi network, that kind of thing. And to hear that one was quite a big one because I was having real frustration trying to set things up because I had a bit of a Wi-Fi crash recently and I needed to reconnect different things. So they were the two things I thought I'd share in case anybody else is in the same boat as I was.
There really needs to be a way to try out these apps before you buy the devices. I mean, I guess that cat feeder probably wasn't, I mean, I imagine it cost a fair bit, but it's easy enough to send back if it's really not accessible. But we had, up until I moved house about 6 months ago, we had a smart washing machine that tied into SmartThings, and that was Okay, there was a couple of occasions where they broke the app, and then that was me pretty much either not able to use the washing machine or very difficult to use the washing machine. At least that's the excuse I used. But
No, I had the same thing, Callum. I came home one day, and yeah, I have a washing machine connected to the Smart Things app, which is a different one to the one I was talking about. And they, I don't know what they'd done, but I thought, okay, great. So I just can't wash anything now. Fabulous.
yeah. Well, I mean, we've ended up not necessarily intentionally, but when we moved, we've ended up moving away from not smart devices, but smart appliances. Because, like, we had a smart washing machine and dishwasher, they were the two big ones. And we got a new washing machine anyway. The dishwasher it's an integrated dishwasher, so it was in this house already when we got here. And to my relief, physical buttons.
You say that, Callum, I had to get a smart washing machine because all of the other normal ones were touch screen. So I had to get a smart one in order to be able to
Yeah,
work it at all.
we just got one of the cheap ones just now. Just one of the really cheap basic ones with a little dial and
I try as much as possible is to get apps now, and actually I learned this after I broke their app a few years ago, was if I'm looking at something that has a smart app or can be controlled with your phone, can it also be controlled with a voice control on an Alexa or a smart Google Home device? And that's kind of my insurance policy, if you like. So if they break the app, I can still maybe not do the full functionality, but get most of what I want through voice control. And even better if it has some physical controls as well. So like the Hive, I don't think, to be fair, I was quite quick on the Hive one, so I'm not sure the sort of mini version was available then. But I wouldn't advise people to get the mini version because it doesn't come with physical buttons. So, like I say, when Wi-Fi crashed a few weeks ago, I was still able to manually press the buttons on the Hive device to boost the heating. I was manually able to turn my lights on and off, even though I couldn't get into the app. So wherever possible, they're the kind of the two security things I put in place, but it's not always an option, and they do make it hard, and sometimes it's just exhausting trying to manage all of this.
Oh, it really is. Yeah. Hubert, what's new with you?
Very quickly from me, I've changed podcasts apps again, purely because Pocket Casts have fixed their accessibility issues with playback effects. And the reason I've wanted to use this app in the first place when I discovered it in May 2025, and the reason I really liked it was because it has listening stats, and I love my stats. As a lot of people know, anything that allows me to track stats of any activity, I really enjoy looking at, and this app does that pretty well. But the problem I had was that actually the accessibility issues made the app not unusable. But I like to listen to podcasts at variable speeds, and that wasn't really easy to do, to the point where I was like, well, I'll use another app which was Castro, which I demonstrated. But I found out that Pocket Casts has a lot of the same features Castro has, so it's actually joined together my favorite things of, removing episodes from queue if I'm not interested in them, archiving them immediately once I get a notification, and also listening stats. So yeah, Pocket Casts is my new podcasts app. I will demo it in the next few weeks on Tech Talk, but yeah, that's new from me.
Am I the only person who doesn't do this whole speeding things up? It just sounds weird to me. I hear a lot of people saying this.
I think it depends what it is you're listening to.
Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend listening to a radio drama at 2x speed, put it this way, but a spoken audio which just has the voice, I think it works.
Yeah, well, see, I'm with Callum. I have my VoiceOver and JAWS and other sort of talking devices. I've even sped up my Alexa, which is really easy. Just say talk faster. But if for when it's sort of actual people talking, because it's human language and it's human voices at human speeds, I tend to just leave it. I only ever speed it up actually if I'm trying to fast forward to a particular point. And it's maybe a bit clunky depending on what app or device or whatever it is that I'm using. But yeah, it never occurs to me to just on a normal day to speed up a podcast or voice note or whatever.
I can't bring myself away from Overcast, to be honest, just because I've got everything set up how I like it with the playlists and priorities and all that. And that's got quite a clever feature. I can't remember what it's called, but it basically, it doesn't speed up the podcast, but it trims down silences. So if we're talking and you pause for a couple of seconds like that, it will probably trim down that gap and you can't tell, but it just brings it together kind of nicely, and it's really cool. Listening to podcasts without it just sounds a bit odd sometimes. Oh, there you go, Pocket Casts. An app well worth checking out, and expect a demo on that soon as well. I'll hold you to that. Well, another busy week for us. Stick with us. This is Tech Talk.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio. We are going to discuss some major news from Be My Eyes, who we have discussed frequently here on RNIB Tech Talk. Joining me to talk about exactly what this is CEO Mike Buckley and Product Manager Andy Lane. Andy and Mike, welcome to you both.
Hi there.
Thank you for having us.
Mike, I guess the best place to start would be, can you tell us about the new workplace feature?
Yeah, I'm really excited to be launching Be My Eyes Workplace, but let's level set for a minute. 70% of people who are blind or low vision are either underemployed or unemployed. And that is not because they lack skills, ability, critical thinking, all those things. It's because of the systemic barriers that exist to employment. It's everything from the application process to getting to the job, to being in the job, to having a series of inaccessible tools in the work environment. And then also just societal's lack of awareness, right? And as a company and as a purpose-driven organization, we wanted to attack this. And so we're launching a product called Be My Eyes Workplace that basically is a workplace accessibility management system. It's a product that uses AI, software and people to work with the other assets on a desktop, your apps, your screens, your tools, and help make them more accessible and the workplace more accessible. And it has three core functions. The first is called Workplace AI, which is basically an AI-powered desktop agent that provides nearly instant visual assistance for whatever's on the screen or whatever's in a folder. The second is called Workplace Connect, which is a real-time screen support through one-click calls to trusted groups of colleagues. So say you work in a large enterprise, we can have, you know, 30, 40, 50 people who can get connected to you at any time to answer a question, to help with support, to provide a human layer. Now, this may be just the IT department, or it may be a group of trusted colleagues. Like, you can curate the experience as the blind or low vision employee however you want. But having that human assisted rollover is important for a couple of reasons. One, as a double check, right, on the software, on the AI, and also as a way to build culture and relationship build. And the third piece is this is a workplace reader, it's called, which offers detailed descriptions of inaccessible file content, including things, you know, text, images, and graphs. And rather just saying, hey, there's a graph, it explains in detail what the graph is and provides context. And it summarizes PDFs. We think this enables better productivity for the blind or low vision employee and for the organization. It should help with employment and retention if we do this well. It should be a lever for inclusion and culture in an organization. And the biggest thing is like business impact. Right? This all came out of us launching kind of a free app called Be My Eyes for Windows, which was a desktop support that was getting 3,000 downloads a month. And we just said, wow, there's something interesting going on here. What if we can get this inside organizations and make them more accessible and make employment easier? And so that's the goal. It's a 1.0 product, but we're really excited to start.
It's an exciting tool. And, you know, it does sound like a massive step up, and we'll discover more as we go on. But Andy, you know, you yourself have sight loss. Can you tell us, before this feature kind of launched, you know, what were some of your particular issues you had in the workplace that, you know, Be My Eyes Workplace is very much helping to tackle?
I do have sightloss. I'm completely blind now, and I've gone through a spectrum of being, I think I had something like 1 or 2% vision when I was a child, and that went down to completely nothing at all, lights out in about 5 years ago. I would have considered myself low vision. As a low vision user, I would get to parts of my work day and just not be able to see something, not be able to see an element on the screen. I would find inaccessible graphs, inaccessible charts, inaccessible training materials. The meeting room, that brainstorming room that we've all been in, where there's a project and it's got a it's critical path, and there's post-its up all over the walls, and everybody's got this creative process going on that everybody's a part of. I felt very much left out of that. So to now know that I can point my phone at the wall that was currently, previously completely inaccessible, and I might not be able to move around it as effectively as a sighted person, but I at least have an independent way to that information. I can then pull up that through history. I can now pull up that chat session on my laptop and just be in my normal work environment. And instead of leaning over to the person next to me and hoping that they're good enough and kind enough to sort of work with me, I can now get access to that process that's out on the wall, lay it out. I can ask questions of an AI. It's a really good way to think of an AI almost as a person who can answer questions, because it can. You can dig in on a data point, or you can dig in on an idea, because it understands what we're trying to do on the wall. It understands context, and we can have this ongoing backward and forward conversation, almost like the person next to me, but completely independently. And I don't know about you, but that just makes such an enormous difference to my day. But now, as a completely blind user, I might get to a completely inaccessible UI element on a web page or something. I have certainly felt that feeling of, no, not again, not this. Is this going to be a 3 minute stop to my day or the rest of the day? Or I've got to get up and go and try and find somebody who can be kind enough to help. And it's not that they mind, because I'm sure they don't. But it's that I'd like to be able to do it myself. I'd like to feel like I have some kind of control over the things that I'm doing, rather than going and finding somebody else. Having the ability to hit a few keys on the keyboard, and now instead of having to get up and hope that I'm not breaking into somebody's day. There might be 20, 30, 40 people around the company who've agreed to take incoming calls from me on a as I need it basis. I'll press these key combinations. A call's going to ring on their desktop, and they can choose. They can say, oh, I'm a bit busy at the moment. Perhaps I'll wait for somebody else to pick up. Or they can say, oh, I'd love to speak to Andy. Then they can pick that call up, and I can just ask them, would you mind just hitting that thing, or telling me what that edit box is, or look over this PowerPoint presentation that I'm working on, and I don't know whether it's visually correct. I don't know everybody's going to be confused when it goes up on the projector. Would you just give me a visual perspective? It's not that I can't be bothered to go and find somebody. It's that there's a lot of vulnerability in that, because I can't just catch someone's eye like somebody else can, and just with a little facial expression say, is it okay to chat? It's almost like bringing a social element, bringing the ability to make relationships. Like I mentioned with that facial expression, the facial expression returned is it, there's a bond there. There's something that happens, and that stays, because the next time you make that eye contact might be, oh, shall I sit down for lunch with you or something? And this is how friendships get made. I can see there being a really nice social aspect to this, that it's kind of allowing us as blind people to more easily make more friends more easily around the office.
Mike, coming back to you now, one of the major kind of concerns around things is around these things is data security. How does the Be My Eyes workplace feature ensure that if sensitive data is being handled, that is kept safe?
Completely walled off environment built for scale and security. This is an enterprise product, right? It's single sign-on, it's SOC 2 compliant, an enterprise deployment model. And so it was built with security and privacy and safety in mind. And we have a lot of experience on that front, right? From the customer service product and AI that we've sold into various companies. So should not be an issue.
Now, when it comes to blind and partially sighted people, you know, we probably have listeners listening to this going, this is amazing, I want this in my workplace. You know, how can blind and partially sighted people recommend this tool to their employers? How does the process work?
We are going out to as many employers as we can on our own. So there will be an aggressive push on that. But I think there are two things that a blind or low vision employee can do. Obviously, alerting your company, your manager, the HR department, whoever's most appropriate to the fact that this new tool is available is one way. And there's a host of information about what the tool is and what it does on our website that you can use. I think the other thing is you can just go to the existing support channels at Be My Eyes and say, I'm interested in this. Can you help me, you know, figure out how to get this? And by the way, if you want to email me or Andy, do that. My email is mike@bemyeyes.com. If you're interested in getting this into your workplace, we'll try to help.
Now, in terms of employers, you know, what would you say to an employer who may not be familiar with such tools and maybe hesitant to invest to say, well, actually, this is what it will do to your organization to convince them to invest in, you know, in such a helpful tool?
Productivity increase, employment and retention improvements, inclusion and culture improvements. I believe very strongly in equity, and I believe very strongly in accessibility and inclusion. And I think that there's a moral reason to do that. But let's be honest, businesses don't always act for purely moral reasons. And it's our job, Be My Eyes, to make a compelling business argument as to why this is going to work. And that's about productivity, retention, cultural improvement, and business impact, right? That's what this is geared towards. And by the way, this doesn't break the bank, right? The seat licenses are under $100 a month, right? Which is much cheaper than a lot of other software that's out there in the market. This should pay for itself in business benefit.
This is a start of something game-changing when it comes to workplace productivity and accessibility. But, you know, the other trend is also wearable technology. I mean, Mike, where does this go from here?
We are already envisioning integrations with the Ray-Ban Meta glasses, but also when other wearables come to the market, that's where this is going to really shine, right? There will also be integrations with other software platforms, right? Whether it's, you know, Slack or Teams or Zoom or whatever. So this is just the start, but think about the power of being able to kind of call a colleague on your Ray-Ban Metas, have them see what's going on through the glasses, and your hands are completely free, right, to fix the problem together. That's where this has to go. We're already working on one integration with the Ray-Ban Metas. I'm not ready to announce it yet, but like, what your question is prescient, because this is where this is all going.
Before we kind of finish up, can I ask you, you know, if people would like to find out more information, whether they're an employer, whether they are a blind or partially sighted staff member, where can they go to get more information?
On bemyeyes.com, there are simple forms to fill out to request information, to get a demo, to get a free 2-week trial period on this. We're happy to answer any and all inquiries. And, you know, we love talking about this. So please go to bemyeyes.com and ask us for information, ask us for a demo, and we'll set it up quickly.
A bit of a tech fantasy question for you both. And Andy, I'll start with you on this one. You know, you just launched a game-changing tool for workplaces all over the world. Now, let's move 5 years, 2030. Andy, what does the modern office look like for a blind or partially sighted employee?
It's so hard to say, but one thing is for certain at the moment is we are at the most exciting time in history that I can think of. Today I was reading about an AI who, it was an installation on a guy's laptop, and he'd given it access to all of his services, and he'd given it a budget of $5 a day on his credit card. Before he went to bed, he said, "It's nighttime. I want you to surprise me in the morning." He was woke up in the morning by a phone call from his AI. So overnight, it had gone out. It had purchased an actual phone number that was VoIP. It had purchased a voice from 11 Labs, and it had come up with, it cooked this idea up by itself and actioned these things in the world. Then thought, "I'll wake this person up in the morning. That will be your surprise." It said, "This is your surprise. What do you think?" So that's where we are in 2025 with an AI having the ability to affect things in the world, to do things. And we're hearing about these models where there's the ability to talk to an AI and things happen on your desktop. Please, can you click on this? Please, can you do this? Please, can you fill this form out? Please, could you know, these things from everybody's perspectives are productivity. I don't even know. Force multipliers, how many X? I don't even know. But for a blind, low vision person, it's taking a world that has so many frustrations in the day and potentially making it a kind of a voice interface that we've always wanted. This, just get this done. What's on my calendar? Just do this. Can you book this for me? And it just goes off and does these things. I can imagine that part of AI is going to completely change the landscape of accessibility, and access, and equal opportunities in the workplace over the next 5 years.
Think about this picture. Forgetting for a moment about the theories that about whether AI will create more jobs or reduce jobs. I think that both are plausible and we have to figure a lot out as a society. But if you're asking me for like what happens in 2030, I think the blind or low vision employee wakes up at home, puts on her wearable, gets an immediate update of certain to-dos for the day, both personal and professional. You walk out the door, it provides automated and instant navigational access around your city or street. You use a voice command to call your Waymo to get to work. You take your Waymo to work. Your navigational assistant also helps you navigate through the corporate walls. You sit down or you stand up at your desk area, whatever it is, and almost certainly you either talk to your technology or press your wearable device and connect into the world of the company environment and start to attack your problems for the day. I think this is highly plausible. And by the way, as the blind or low vision employee, you're probably supervising a number of other AI agents who are doing a bunch of busy tasks on your behalf. I think this is where this goes. And it's incredibly exciting. It's also a little scary, right, to think about what that world looks like, you know, with so much automation. But we are at a point in history where we don't have a choice but to embrace and attack this and also make sure that the blind and low vision community has power, input, and opportunity in how this system develops.
Thank you very much, Mike Buckley, CEO at Be My Eyes, and Andy Lane, Product Manager from Be My Eyes, for telling us about Be My Eyes Workplace here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
Students at Vancouver Island University have designed a device called Proximity Pal to help blind and partially sighted people navigate safely and independently. It's a small device worn across the chest that starts to vibrate when an object is 1.5 metres away and gets more intense the closer you move. We're joined today by creators Jack Redberger and Jay Coedis to learn more. So, firstly, what inspired you both to create the project?
We were doing a project management course at the Vancouver Island University ITAS program, which is an applied program for technology. Or basically, the whole course that we were doing just involves creating a project from the ground up and working with a small team and just developing something that you bring to from an idea to fruition over the course of a couple of months of the term. And so during the beginning of that idea development stage, I just happened to watch a documentary. In the part of the documentary, there were some blind people trying to navigate New York City. And because it's New York City, there's scaffolding everywhere. It was just difficult because a white cane doesn't reach up beyond that foot height. And so I thought, hey, well, maybe there's something that we can make that doesn't exist already that can maybe assist in detecting things that are above that low range. And so that's kind of where most of it started. But also, I just wanted to try and do something in that course that was different and something that I hadn't seen exactly before, and also just kind of like that didn't exist already or had a real purpose,
and also something that would help people instead of just making another something out in the world. It was really about finding something that could help make life better in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, absolutely. And how does it detect objects, and how have you developed it?
So we have a LiDAR camera that's just used to kind of map an area in front of it. and it's able to detect deviations from a base, so from ground level and from something blocking the signal, so something in the way, scaffolding bar, stop sign. And once it sees that, we have it calculate the distance that it is away, and as it gets closer, we have haptic feedback motors, both in the portion that goes across the chest and the strap that goes across the shoulder, that can vibrate at different intensities and different timings to let you know whether something is right in front of you, whether it's getting closer. And we're still working on some of those haptic feedback kind of buzzes and codes for different scenarios of what's in front of you.
I'd like to add on to that as well. I think we went into this with the assumption, or we had just decided to go with that vibration-based technology, the haptic feedback, because totally, again, just assumptions. But I thought that it would be a great idea to have kind of like the hearing sense just completely available. I think that, from what I was reading, is quite important. And so having that vibration, it also means that when you're out in a noisy environment, you're still going to be getting that signal and that notification that something's coming up nearby.
You've made it look quite stylish as well, so it's not sort of super obvious. It looks quite similar to other bags that lots of people wear around, which is obviously really important for people that sort of just want to blend in. Can you give us an audio description of how it looks at the moment in its current form?
Yeah, for sure. It's essentially, like you said, just a little bag, like a shoulder-mounted bag. The one that we have currently, our original prototype, is just a small gray pouch. Only thing that distinguishes it is a little hole in the front of it where a small sensor will poke out. But other than that, it's probably 8 inches across and just sits right in the small of your chest. That's the great thing, actually, about it, in my opinion, about that design, is that, like you say, it's so indistinguishable from any other sort of pouch that you would wear.
And you have designed this from scratch, as you both said. What were some of the original ideas that you rejected, and why did you decide to follow the route that you went down?
The original prototype, when we did it in class, had a ultrasonic sensor in it, and this was one of the key differences between what we're developing currently and what was used in the past. LiDAR uses laser, and ultrasonic uses like sound waves that bounce out and back, kind of like echolocation, like a bat does. And it was not reliable enough to get us good data that we could use in the vibration motors. We just couldn't be consistent. And consistency is something that was really important, especially when you have someone that's going to be relying on this as a navigation aid. So that was one of the key upgrades, I suppose, on their RNX prototype.
And during the process from the beginning, there were talks of adding in depth cameras so we can do AI recognition of objects and things like that, that currently we've kind of realized we were letting it run away and kind of having what's called scope creep, where we were just adding so much to it that we've scaled back to what we have now, where it's using LiDAR, so we're getting accurate and better description of what's in front of us and being able to see that distance down to, I think it was within a couple of inches.
Oh, yeah, for sure. More than that, too. It's very precise, the LiDAR.
Yeah, very precise.
Yeah, that's really exciting. And also, you've got a lot of recognition for the Proximity Pal. You've won an award, which is really fantastic. And the Canadian National Institute of the Blind are working with you to test the product and provide feedback from blind and partially sighted people. What are some of the things that you're hoping to learn about, or some of the feedback you're hoping to get from those trials?
Yeah, that's a big area we need to focus on. We actually have done essentially zero testing as of right now with blind and partially sighted people, because we want to get that product to a good base level before we start really user testing. But once we do, I think one of the things that I had mentioned earlier is just like that vibration, and potentially maybe it's disruption, or it's not strong enough or recognizable enough, and maybe we need to pivot to something audio-based. Or even the location for where the bag is, where it sits, if it could be somewhere else, potentially even range of detection. We were focusing quite heavily on vertical, something that's coming in from like a tree branch or a scaffold, as I discussed earlier, but looking at the horizontal field as well, if things are coming from the side, is something that maybe it is more useful than we have initially considered.
If anyone does want more information or wants to reach out to us, we do have an email address, proximitypal@itas.ca, and that goes to both Jack and I, and we're happy to answer any questions.
Or even feedback as well. Like if there's something that you think might be really valuable or useful, and send it our way. We're, especially because we're in that prototype phase still. It's great to hear.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Jack and Jay, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Callum spoke to technology enthusiast Georgia Strachan about her experiences with tech. Let's head back now to the final part of their conversation.
So, I don't know much about this, but something that I've seen in the tiny bit of intro that we've got from you is that you are interested in 3D printing. I could talk about this all day, I think, but what's going on there?
So that is definitely a really, really recent thing. That was, so when I was younger, I'd seen sort of YouTubers and that talking about 3D printing, channels dedicated to it, and my initial reaction was, huh, that's cool, I guess, and then moved on. And then a few months ago, my dad did the same thing. I must point out that my dad is also, he's a big gadget guy. He said it sort of on the same wavelength as me, where he just likes technology and likes gadgets and gets into 10 new hobbies sometimes if he can. And one of the things he was interested in was 3D printing. So we agreed, okay, let's get a 3D printer. And we got a Bamboo Lab one, because this was at the point, this is at the point where 3D printing is a lot more accessible. Because back in the day, it was a lot more tinkering, a lot more trying to get it to work more than actually printing stuff. But now that there's the more automated printers that try and do everything for you, and you just send a file over and print it. They're connected to the cloud in that now, which means you can use a mobile app, which is quite good. I guess that's another... I could also say as an accidental accessibility thing, if the app works well with VoiceOver and other screen readers, that depends. But when I got into it, I was like, okay, yeah, this is cool. And then I started printing stuff. I'm like, wow, this is like a model, and it's now in real life, and it's been made. And the layer lines were like really small as well. Like you could get it really fine. So it just didn't look... Because that's the big thing with 3D printing, right? It's the... Everyone knows it's been 3D printed if there's like visible lines on it, because it's all layer by layer. But the newer ones, you can definitely get really detailed with it. And I just really enjoyed it. I mean, my dad definitely enjoyed it. He loves it. He's been printing so much tacky sort of trinket stuff, some personalized gifts and all that. I've used it to make gifts before. Like I made a little light that looks like an amethyst geode. And we even got some, because that's the fun thing, you get like all the different filaments, which is just the spool that feeds into the printer, and you can get some translucent ones. So we got a translucent purple for a light to shine through, and there's so much potential in it. I think that's what really got me into the fact that there's so much potential. And again, it's community driven. It's probably for the same reason I like Linux, because it's community driven. There's so much potential. If you're not creative enough, you can just grab other people's models as long as you're allowed to. And I think that's amazing.
How easy do you find all that, like sorting the filament out and things like that? Because all the impression that I've always had is that you've, like you said, you spend more time building the machine and maintaining it than actually printing. But again, that was about 10 years ago that I had very limited experience in it.
Oh, it's so different now. It's literally, imagine just a big box with a door at the front. And then inside that door is the plate. And at the back, there's just a little holder for your filament and a little tube poking out. And you just feed the filament into the tube and it just grabs it and feeds it into the nozzle. And it'll tell you, yep, this your filament's in, you're fine, you're ready to print. And then you go on a mobile app or your computer and you just pick your model, send it to the printer over the cloud. You can also still use like SD cards and that, but if you want, you can just send it over the cloud. It'll start printing. The light comes on. It starts printing. And a lot of cameras in them too, which is another thing I absolutely love. So that if you're not at the printer, you don't want to keep walking over to it, you can just quickly check the camera and make sure that it's not catastrophically failed. or that it's nearly done. You get a notification when it's done as well. Like there's so much done that it's all automated now. You still get like the more tinkery ones. Like I think Creality still sells like the Ender ones where you do all the tinkering, but stuff like the Bamboo Labs ones are really, they're just so much is done for you.
I can imagine AI coming, being really helpful in this sort of thing. Does that come into play at all?
Yeah, recently it has, and that's another thing. It's only been, I think it was last month or the month before, they came out with some new versions of their classic printers that they feature AI, and one of the big things it features it for is to detect if a print has gone catastrophically wrong, if it starts making spaghetti instead of the object that you wanted. And that's even better, because then there could be like a tiny little stray bit of filament somewhere that I haven't noticed, and it starts printing and I walk away to like make a cup of tea or something or do something else thinking, oh, I'll just set it and forget it. And then the AI will pop up on my phone saying, hey, we think that there might be something going wrong. You should go check. So I check the camera and go, oh, that's gone horribly wrong. So instead of wasting all that filament for a print that ends up being bad, you get to cancel it, clean up the plate and start again or see where you went wrong. And it also detects like tangled filament. There's loads of sensors too that work with the AI to detect if your spool's tangled or if you're about to run out. Sometimes it can even like detect the weight of the spool. It's crazy. And you get like these systems that let you put multiple colours in at once, and it'll switch between the colours and you can do multicolour printing, which is good for me because I hate painting. But even with that, it's got its own sensor to tell you like what colours in each section of the little multicolour thing. And there's so much. And I think the AI also picks up, like, if you try and start a print and there's already something on the plate, like you forgot to take off the last thing you printed, it will tell you, like, hey, there's something on here that's not the plate, because, you know, it's a brightly coloured thing on a grey plate, so AI is easy to figure that one out. So I think that's really good. And if someone, like, couldn't really properly see inside the printer, then I think that could be useful for them too.
And is that a third-party thing then, or is that something that's built into a lot of printers nowadays?
Oh, that's built in. Like, at least for the ones I use, it's built in. It's like one of their big marketing points. And as much as I usually hate AI being pushed as a marketing thing, I think this is one of the times where, yeah, it's genuinely like a useful thing to have. I think there was also, so when it does like the printing, there's usually, it has to purge a little bit of filament out just to make sure the nozzle's clean and it's the right colour, kind of like dipping your brush in the water when you're painting. And when it does that, it just comes out the back. And I love the name for it, it's just called the poop chute. But it'll dump that out the back. But sometimes if you've got a little container under there to catch it all and it all backs up, that can also cause problems because then the nozzle hits the backed up filament. And that also causes a disaster. So the AI can detect that as well. Even if it's way at the back of the printer, like away from the camera, it can pick that up too. And again, that's just all built in. It's just part of the printer. You don't have to set up anything. It'll just, again, send it straight to your phone app going, yeah, there's something wrong, maybe. And if there's not anything wrong, you can just click, yeah, it's fine, don't worry about it, and it'll just keep going.
Literally, I could talk to you about this all day. I've always been tempted by a 3D printer, and you're not helping. You're really not helping.
Yeah, it started, I think we've got so much filament now, that's how it starts. You get the printer, you're like, okay, yeah, this is fun, and then you just buy so much filament because you want to do so many projects. And I've got like a bunch of bookmarks of like models that I want to print. Like some are useful, some are just decorative. Like one of my favorite things was just like a wee simple headphone stand I just wanted to print because I needed one, and it has a little tray at the bottom and it just comes in two parts and you print them and that's it. And I've even made my own models before, because in school I did a little tiny bit of graphic communication, a bit of 3D modelling, and I found one of my old projects from the school times, which was like a toy train. And I thought, you know what? I have a 3D printer now. I'm going to make this. I'm just going to send it over and print it. And it actually printed. It's just weird seeing like a part of my school time physically in the world instead of just on the computer. I still think that's crazy how you can just do that at home now.
You've got to come back on and we can dig into some more of this in a bit more detail. The 3D printing, it's like the 3D printing and the Linux stuff. It's all stuff that doesn't really get talked about, especially on these kind of shows. So there's a lot of interesting stuff. I'm sure we'll be hearing more from you. Before I let you go, slightly away from tech at the minute, but you've got an involvement with RNIB Scotland as well, right?
Yeah, so I'm part of RNIB Scotland's youth forum known as Haggai, and our logo is a little haggis with a kilt on, a little hat. He's very cute. And the point of that youth forum is to campaign for change. It's made up entirely of 16 to 27-year-olds. And it's run by us. We decide what we want to do and how we're going to do it. We make videos to raise awareness. And as far as I'm aware, it only exists in RNIB Scotland, but we're hoping to expand a similar concept to other regions, hopefully, maybe. But it's my main, I've been in there since 2015, actually. Yeah, I've been there for a long time, since like school. And I also volunteer at other parts of RNIB, just some community stuff, for example, swap with me sessions where we go to different bus companies, we talk to drivers about our experiences on public transport, because public transport is another big passion. It's right next to tech, to be honest. And we just tell them what it's like, and then we get them, we wear some specs and try and get on the bus where one of us sits in the driver's seat, which the first time was very funny, just being able to sit on a bus driver's seat.
And if people want to find out more about that or get involved, how can they do that?
So for Haggai especially, we have a Facebook, we have email, which is just it's haggai.mailbox@rnib.org.uk to email Haggai, especially if you are in Scotland and you do know a blind or partially sighted young person between 16 and 27. It's a really fun group. It's a lot of peer support as well as campaigning, and we've seen a lot of people come out of their shells when they join. And for the community stuff, I guess that's just get in touch with RNIP Scotland in general.
Amazing. Well, Georgia, it's been great talking to you. I'm sure we'll have you back on Tech Talk soon, because as I keep saying, there's a lot we could get into there. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And that's all we've got time for this week. Thank you so much, as always, for listening. And if you want to get in touch, if you've got any comments or anything you want to share or anything we might be able to help you out with, techtalk@rnib.org.uk is the email address you need. We'll be back with you next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovic, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.